The winner of InvestX's hashtag What's Your Why campaign was a reminder that disciplined saving and long-term thinking still matter. InvestX invited new and current clients to share their personal reasons for saving. If that resonated, their personal cash investment remains available from 100,000 Rand. It's accessible and no private bank account is required. Focused on stability, preservation, and competitive interest rates.
Good morning and welcome to the BizNews Daybreak. I'm your host, Kerry Lanigan. Up first, our partners at Bloomberg get us up to date with the latest overnight news.
The U.S. is pressing ahead with its naval blockade of Hormuz to curb Iranian oil exports. On Monday, six merchant vessels complied with U.S. instructions to turn around and re-enter an Iranian port. In a post on X, Central Command said no vessels made it through the blockade on day one. The Trump administration will allow another sanctions waiver to expire this weekend. It had temporarily authorized the purchase of certain Iranian crude oil. Now, a separate sanctions waiver authorizing purchases of Russian crude oil lapsed last week. European countries are reportedly putting together a plan for a broad coalition of countries to help free up shipping through the Strait of Hormuz. This would include sending mine clearing and other military vessels. But according to the Wall Street Journal, the plan would only come after the war, and it may exclude one country in particular, the U.S. Today, Lebanon and Israel held their first direct talks in decades. These discussions in Washington were part of a broader diplomatic push to end the conflict in the Middle East. The U.S. said both countries agreed to launch direct negotiations for a comprehensive peace deal. Here is Israel's ambassador to the U.S., Yekiel Leiter, speaking to reporters.
We discovered today that we're on the same side of the equation. And that's the most positive thing we could have come away with. We are both united in liberating Lebanon from an occupation power dominated by Iran called Hezbollah.
That is Yekiel Leiter, the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. The European Central Bank is weighing what action may be needed to address higher oil prices and bruised economic sentiment. Here is ECB President Christine Lagarde.
I very much hope that people can sit at the table, can come to their sense, and understand that it will be in the best interest of the global economy, of the people, that a war settlement is reached and that not just a ceasefire, and that we can navigate through the straits of the world.
President Trump's tariffs may be restored by July to levels in place before the Supreme Court struck down many of those levies. These new tariffs would be applied under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent told a Wall Street Journal event, this tariff authority has already been tested in the courts.
But what we found, and it's counterintuitive, that a lot of corporates had held up some of their CapEx because of the IEPA lawsuit that eventually made its way to the Supreme Court.
Right.
So now, using Section 301, which has survived more than 5,000 legal challenges, they will be certain of what the tariff policy is.
Meta has announced an expanded multi-billion dollar partnership with Broadcom. The aim is to design and build custom chips to power Meta's AI efforts. This partnership also includes a commitment to develop more than 1 gigawatt of computing capacity. Separately, Broadcom CEO Hock Tan will leave Meta's board of directors when his term expires. Amazon is acquiring the satellite operator Globalstar. This deal is worth roughly $11.6 billion, and it would expand the services of Amazon's satellite system. A new satellite-to-cell phone service is expected to launch in 2028, and if this deal goes through as planned, Apple will get a deep-pocketed and ambitious partner in satellite communications. Apple is preparing a range of new satellite features, including satellite-powered maps and photo messaging.
In local politics, newly elected DA leader Jordan Hill Lewis sat down with Bloomberg's Jumana Buchechi to weigh in on the risks around the ANC succession battle and his plans to grow the Democratic Alliance.
We had the appointment of yourself as leader of the Democratic Alliance, and I think one of the other questions people have is what happens next year when there will be a new leader appointed for the ANC. Do you foresee any troubles to the coalition with a new potentially incoming leader?
It is a moment of profound risk, let me put it like that. It's impossible to look into the crystal ball and say what the ANC's internal factions will do. That party is fraught with division, and is driven really by money politics. That's the kind of motive force of politics and power inside the ANC is money and access to state resources. And so the fights will be incredibly bitter. And we will have to reassess what it means for the coalition government and for the country thereafter. It's very hard for us to predict, but we sincerely hope, let's put it this way, we sincerely hope that there emerges a leadership that is able to see the bigger picture of what is right for South Africa, and what is able to put the best interests of South Africa ahead of the very powerful moneyed crony interests that now run that party.
And in your speech yesterday, you talk about your ambition to make the DA the largest political party in South Africa. How are you going to achieve that? And what exactly are you going to do that will resonate with voters that hasn't been done before?
Well, it links to my earlier point around the politics of competence and the politics of getting a country that actually works and moves forward. Because I think many South Africans, a growing majority of South Africans, are just sick and tired of seeing every basic service, every state function, every state department eroded and dilapidated through a corruption and mismanagement. And so the tide really is turning. And so I think that's the first big opportunity. The second big opportunity for us is really to be much more present in communities where we have not garnered a huge amount of support in the past. We do at least have a small amount of support. We have a small base to grow from there. But to be much more present there, to be much more active and champion the issues that voters care about, particularly here in this city, as I said, South Africa's largest city, Johannesburg, and to win them to our cause. Now, that's not going to happen overnight. They won't all vote for us immediately. But that's not the point. The point is steady growth in the right direction. And I think we can do that.
Still in South African politics, BizNews journalist Chris Steyn speaks to Khulu Radebe, co-founder of the service movement for Metsi Maholo, on why civic movement has now decided to enter electoral politics.
We've been doing work in the community for quite some time. And it has not been the agenda to really contest the elections. We wanted to be a support system to local government because we believe that civil society organizations can play a very important role and support democracy. And unfortunately, things didn't turn the way we planned them. You know, it's always a problem where people don't really understand the difference between societal activism, democracy, and governance. And that creates a problem in South Africa. I always say to my guys, you know, we made a terrible mistake in 1994 to abandon civil society organizations and thought that democracy by its own nature, having a democratic government, is the solution to every societal problem. But we only realized later that government can only do this much and civil society can come handy in assisting government. You talk in terms of your IDP processes. You know, if you have to maintain a sporting facility, you give it to the community. And in that, you need, you know, an NGO that can take care of that particular infrastructure. It can't be government 100%. It must always be civil society, whether it's a sporting organization, whether it's a multi-people center, whatever it is, it must be given to society for better management. And government will just ensure that private sector comes handy. Because without that relationship between private sector and government, it will be difficult for PPPE to really work on the ground. So this is what we have always said, and we realized it later that no, we need to take part in this process. If anything fails, you know, let's take this thing by ourselves.
And closing out this morning, Rubini Macro Associates Chairman and CEO Nouriel Rubini weighs in on the risks around Iran, oil, and the global economy. Rubini sat down with Bloomberg's David Ingalls at the Greenwich Economic Forum in Hong Kong.
Well, the honest truth is no one knows how it ends. As you pointed out, you can do only scenario analysis. You know, about 2 weeks ago, I wrote a piece and I said there are two options. One is de-escalation, and the other one is escalation. And the argument for de-escalation was that Israel and Trump made two mistakes at the beginning of the war. One, to believe that the initial decapitation of the leadership of the country would lead to regime collapse. Two, the belief that, like in June of last year, Iran would be either unwilling or unable to block the Strait of Hormuz and or damage the energy facilities of the GCC countries in the Gulf. Now, given given those two mistakes, people said he's behind the poll, popularity is down, he's going to lose the midterm. He has to blink, he has to chicken out, again, taco, and he has to de-escalate. The problem with the de-escalation was that, you know, the two sides are so far apart that you cannot reach a deal. And if you don't reach a deal, then, and if you don't do anything else, what happens? Iran controls the Strait of Hormuz. Yes, the market rally because sign of relief, the war is in a ceasefire, but oil prices are going to be higher than otherwise. Iran is going to remain a permanent threat to any export and imports of energy, anything else in the Gulf. They're going to rebuild missiles. They're going to rebuild drones. They can even proliferate with a nuclear weapon and become a permanent threat. And the deterrence of the U.S. to credibly support his friends and allies, whether those in the Gulf or in Europe or look in Asia, how are you going to credibly deter China with your friends and allies like Japan, South Korea, Philippines, Taiwan, Australia, and you name it? So it's a strategic disaster. So my argument was that having done the mistake of starting the war, at this point it's better to escalate. Because if you do escalate and eventually you force the regime to surrender, you have a political win and also geostrategic win. The risk of escalation is, of course, that you escalate and then becomes even worse and all prices go to 150, 200. Because you're not able to reopen the Strait of Hormuz and the Iranians attack the energy facilities of the Gulf, and then you end up like in 1970s stagflation. I'm old enough to remember 1973 Yom Kippur War between Israel and Arab states, tripling of oil prices, or 1979 Islamic Revolution Iran, again, tripling of oil prices, and two nasty stagflationary recession in 74, 75, and 80, 82. But, you know, at this point, de-escalating means that you give a strategic win to Iran. So in my view, you have no option but to escalate and hope that if you escalate, eventually you win.
That's your BizNews Daybreak. I'm Kerry Lanigan. Thanks for listening.
The winner of Investec's hashtag What's Your Why campaign was a reminder that disciplined saving and long-term thinking still matter. Investec invited new and current clients to share their personal reasons for saving. If that resonated, their personal cash investment remains available from 100,000 Rand. It's accessible and no private bank account is required, focused on stability, preservation, and competitive interest rates.